Hello everybody and welcome to 2020, a new year, but still just me. And also Brett, he's here, how's it going?
I am hungover from last night.
That Good was God. Something. Charges are pending.
What a doozy.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, look, we've got a special show planned for you today. In just a minute, Brett and I are gonna give a few of our just overall thoughts about what we think 2020 might bring, because it is gonna be a big year in a lot of different ways. But through the course of this hour, we're gonna do things a little bit differently. I secretly love top 10 lists, and so we've got two for you. So in just a little bit, Brett and I are gonna be breaking down the top 10 films of the decade. Very excited about that.
There's no news today. Everybody's hungover.
Exactly. Later on in the show, J.R. Jackson's going to be joining us. We're going to be doing the top 10 garbage people of 2019.
Great.
I think that's going to be a lot of fun. And we've also got questions that were submitted by fans of the show. I'm going to be closing out the show by answering a whole bunch of those about American politics, the future, the show, myself, all of that. So it should be a lot of fun. But we're going to start off with that overview. 2020 is now here. We've obviously got a presidential election coming up. We've got this huge Democratic primary. Other stuff theoretically might happen that are not about that, but that's pretty much dominating my thinking. And so I just wanted to have a conversation with you, Brett. What do we think that this year is gonna be like? What are we hoping for? What are we expecting? What are we fearing?
What I want in this year is for decency and reason to break through. I really want. So we had some like fits and starts of it toward the end of the year with certain people coming out. Like there was a Christian magazine that came out and was like, hey, Trump's a little crazy, we should stop it. But I think—
Like standing for your values.
Standing for your values.
Even when it's difficult.
Yes, and making a stand to push back and shake people awake. What about you, John?
I mean, I'm always down for that. Look, people— I know that we're really partisan, and I know that we really like teams. We're big fans of teams, but there has to be something more fundamental than attachment to any person or any party. And so I just hope that people start to care once again about what is true. But specifically for this election, I mean, we have been through a couple of years now that I think I feel comfortable in saying they have been rough in a number of different ways. I just really hope, like my biggest hope, is that this primary process ends the right way, makes the right choice. We have to have the right person to go up against Donald Trump come November. And I don't necessarily have a lot of faith, but these races are coming up soon, primaries and caucuses, and I'm just watching it and I'm like, look, I've done whatever I have been able to do, whatever little platform I have to try to push people in the right direction, that's now out there and we just have to sort of see.
Yeah.
Like we hit the ball and now it's rolling across the table, what's gonna happen?
Yeah, I feel like a lot of the media when analyzing things like primaries, they pretend like they've done this 1,000 times and they've never done it before.
Mm-hmm.
Like they'll go and they'll say, well, Buttigieg, if he wins like the caucus in Iowa, they won't factor in anything other than this was the X, or if he and someone X, whatever happens in it, they like to take the conclusion that this is A, unprecedented, and B, happens all the time.
Yeah.
And I hate that. I hope they factor in realities on the ground. But that's one thing. But also in terms of like people snapping out of it. And so often we like to label things, and because of the label that they receive, that's good or bad. And we don't analyze whether like the things they do, the things they say, the things they represent are good and bad. People say that's a Democrat, so that's bad. That's a Republican, so that's bad. I think if we all take a second to realize we need to take a step back and evaluate what in the actions are good and bad, what in the consequences of those actions are good or bad, rather than starting with the label, then that'll help a lot.
I think that's wise. I am worried about, I mean, we had a year of really horrific extreme weather events. I'm worried that that will continue, perhaps accelerate. And tied to it, I hope that this huge surge in activism and youth activism around climate change, I hope that we don't look back and think, wow, that was a big thing in 2019. I want that to just, that's a thing now for the rest of our lives. And I'm just sort of watching again from the sidelines and hoping that Greta and the Sunrise Movement and others just keep, they just stay out there. They keep driving press attention to this issue, and that they make sure that as we get closer to the election, it is a big consideration for the candidates and also for the voters.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Also, Legally Blonde 3 comes out this year.
Does it really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Elle Woods is back.
Yeah.
Getting another degree.
Okay, okay. Oh, keep learning, America, okay? So anyway, and that's a reminder that there will be good things this year as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are gonna be spending so much of our time and what a high percentage of our processing power thinking about politics, but there will be other things going on, and so let's all try to bear that in mind during what can become potentially a really dirty year.
Sonic with the good teeth comes out this year. Boys for Life.
That's true, that's true.
There's a lot of creativity.
Exactly,
going.
Star Trek Picard is coming. So anyway, there's some good things to look forward to too. So those are just a few of our thoughts. Obviously, we're gonna be here every day breaking it down. Hopefully, you'll be here with us as well. And so thank you for joining us throughout the year, hopefully, but also for today's show. We've got a lot planned for you. We'll see you after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called The Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of The Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
The decade is ending, and there were some great movies through the course of it. This is, of course, non-political, but you know what, Brett Ehrlich? We like movies. You've done various pop culture related and movie related jobs, and we've watched a lot of them. There were some great ones. So I thought, why don't we put together a list of the top 10 movies of the decade?
Love it. That's a great idea.
I think it is a great idea. And so I'm very excited to start talking about this for the first time.
Yes.
And so we each have five. Our number fives down to our number ones. Mm-hmm. You're gonna be going first for each number, and we're gonna see if there's some overlap. There were a lot of movies, so it seems kind of unlikely. But why don't you get us started?
All right, so my first film, and I just wanna say, first of all, and I'm sure I speak for John too, this is a difficult thing to do.
It's impossible.
It's not impossible.
No, it's impossible. I don't have any, I didn't select any.
You did it.
I did.
You did submit five, I submitted five. It's very difficult to make decisions like this through hundreds of movies that came out, if not thousands of movies that came out over the course of 10 years. So as you'll see, I made some decisions. Some of these are more symbolic than anything, but others mm-hmm. are, so go with me on it.
And well, one movie might represent more than just that movie.
And this will make you mad.
Yes, it will.
This will make you so mad, so just embrace it. I totally understand your feelings, but as you'll see when I'm done explaining, you're wrong.
Okay.
In terms of your opinion. So number five, Bridesmaids.
Mm-hmm.
Bridesmaids is a film that came out in 2011, and before this, the previous decade was dominated by raunchy, toxic masculinity comedies.
It was.
But just like a bunch of things like that, The Hangover and Wedding Crashers, 40-Year-Old Virgin, where like it was all about the dudes. Every film failed the Bechdel test, which is, are the women just there to serve the men? Do they ever have conversations between themselves that aren't about the boys? And Bridesmaids tore down a lot of those norms, made it okay, and also paved the way for, it shows you how good the original movie is in terms of how many copycats came after. We're talking about The Heat and Ghostbusters reboot with ladies. All of that was made possible, really, in Hollywood. And this is how Hollywood works with Bridesmaids.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's that upcoming movie with Selma Hayek.
Yeah,
it seems sort of and now really you just funny. Expect that there will be a lot of movies like that.
A lot of great individual performances, a lot of memorable set piece comedy interactions.
Really, really disgusting.
Doo-doo in a street in a dress.
There
spoiler
was,
alert.
There
you go.
Okay, my number five is a representative of a genre that I don't generally consume too much of, but it is Get Out. I don't watch a lot of horror movies, but I think and I hope that horror movies going forward, many of them will be influenced by Get Out, because Get Out was very scary at times, both shocking but also like deeply unsettling, which I find to be a more satisfying form of horror. At the same time, whenever it wanted to be, it could be as funny as any comedy. And it didn't undercut the horror at all when it wanted to be funny. And at the same time, while doing both of those things, which most movies, including horror movies, can't generally do, it also was deeply socially relevant. And it seems like it's already starting to influence movies. And so I want horror to move in that direction.
Fair enough, great idea. Let's see if it comes up later in my list. The Marvel movie decade is number four for me. One of the great aspects of this collage of interwoven plot lines is that they were able to write a bunch of films that really function as one film. Yes, if I was to choose one, it would probably be Thor Ragnarok, because it managed to
a great movie.
To do that and be a buddy comedy road movie. That was hilarious. They brought in Taika Waititi to be involved in it, which is from the What We Do in the Shadows group and all that. And it was fantastic. I loved it. And that was so hard to do, especially in relation to the previous decade when we were in an era, and this did bleed over into then, but right before the Marvel movie decade started, they had things like Ryan Reynolds as Green Lantern, where they were just, I was on phone calls in a talent agency where I heard people just be like, we know we need a comic book movie. I don't care who it is or how we do it. They do well. And you had films like Green Lantern. And that was the last gasp. And Green Hornet too. I like that a little more.
I didn't see that one.
But Green Lantern specifically, they ruined having Ryan Reynolds. And these Marvel movies changed the reality for that genre and gave rise to a very good movie that's not on my list, but is technically in the Marvel universe, but not this Marvel universe, Deadpool. But
exactly, which proves he could do it.
These films really revitalized that genre and brought it to the whole generation.
Exactly, and I did particularly like Ragnarok. I don't know if it's my favorite one, obviously, but I didn't like Thor 1 very much. And I thought Thor 2 might be the worst of the Marvel movies, but Thor Ragnarok was amazing.
Guardians right up there too.
Guardians very good too, yeah. Okay, my number four is, no pick is gonna get attacked as much as this.
Can't wait for this.
It's Star Wars : The Last Jedi. And I know that Star Wars fans hate Last Jedi. I don't get it. I'm not even saying that it doesn't have issues, but there are sections of The Last Jedi that are everything I want in a movie, and in particular, everything I want in a Star Wars movie. The first bit where they're doing their mission, they're assaulting the dreadnought, that could be an awesome sci-fi short by itself. They fit so much story in just a few minutes. It is so emotional. I tear up. I just watched it yesterday. I teared up again. I've seen it like 10 times. Some of the fights near the end and like what goes on the dreadnought, it's everything I want in a big space opera movie. It does it so well. It is perfect at pulling those emotional strings. I understand that the plot has some issues. I would argue many big budget action movies and sci-fi movies have a few issues if you dig enough. But it this is what I wanted. I liked all the other ones for the most part. I thought the Rogue One was great. I thought The Force Awakens was great, but this was just, it gave me those Star Wars moments.
Well, what you kind of underscore my argument for my number three, which is also a Star Wars film, and it is Rogue One. Number three is Rogue One, and I don't know if anyone can see this, but like for the record,
so
there's a lot of fist bumping coming from the control room because it doesn't have some weird casino scene where I don't know why I see, what's his name, Mr. Aniston.
Justin Theroux.
Justin Trudeau. I don't know why I see him for a second. They never really talk about it. It is so strange. Why don't we just? It is unforgivable.
Not every plan comes together.
Prohibitive. I know, but like, no.
Rogue One's very good. Let's talk about how good Rogue One is.
Rogue One is great because this is why it's above Marvel. It is also a big budget franchise film. But what Rogue One does, that is one of the central criticisms, not to the quality, but definitely to like the tropes of Avengers style movies, is that in all those movies, you're like, the drama's cool, it's awesome, but I know the good guys are gonna win and I know they're gonna survive. And even if they die, I know they're gonna come back. Rogue One was kind of off to here, bridging two different parts of the cinematic universe of Star Wars. And it had that drama. These people, many Jedins will die for this information. We don't know which Jedins, we don't know when Jedins, but many Jedins died. And it is very intense.
What are the Jedins?
That's many Jedins died.
Bothans.
Bothans, really?
Yeah, they're Bothans. You want to question this?
Many Bothans
died. You think I haven't read books that are about Bothans?
Damn it.
Anyway.
I thought it was many Jedi. Anyways, no, either way, Bothans, so but, you win. So John wins this round.
But you have a good
pick,
but not
in terms
so
of quality
win.
Of movie, but Rogue One is best because of the drama that's able to make its way, an uncertainty of hero fate that is able to make it into a film like this in this category. And it's so damn good.
I agree. And it's also possible that it laid the groundwork for movies that, like, you can have a Star Wars movie that's not about the Jedi. We have The Mandalorian now. Would we have had The Mandalorian without Rogue One? I don't know.
I can't hear any point you're making because I'm so mad at myself for the Jedins thing, if
it's
I'm
fine.
Wrong.
There are Jedi, so you have that going for you. My number three is Ex Machina. I think that Ex Machina is just so good. It has almost no one in it. There's almost no set, and yet so much happens in it. It is just such a perfect sci-fi movie. Amazing concept. Great performances. It says something about humanity. It says something about the future. Also made Alicia Vikander a star, which I'm very grateful for. And made me love Oscar Isaac as well. And by the way, it shows what do you get out of a movie being sci-fi? You could have things like they have in there that just, they're just so stimulating. They make you think. And man, that ending. If you haven't seen Ex Machina, it has one of the best endings of any movie in the past decade.
Yeah, that was very close to being on my list. It
really
was an honorable mention. I would like to say that I've seen it multiple times. And it is just a little play.
Mm-hmm. It's a play.
A great short story or play.
So that's the first part of our list. We're going to take a short break and then come back with how we're going to close it out. The best movies of the last decade.
My number two, Get Out.
It made it on, okay.
Get Out for me, specifically this poster. Get Out for all the reasons that John gave, but I won't trivialize it by putting it down on two like John did, on five like John did. Also, I still feel bad about the Bothans thing, so
just. Very good movie. By the way, I hadn't seen that poster before. I love that poster.
Yeah. Your turn.
Great movie. My number two, sort of similar if we're one-upping each other, is Avengers Endgame. And this kind of is a cop-out. It stands in for I have really enjoyed the Marvel movies, but this one in particular, like if you want to give credit to what Marvel did with all these movies, something that seemed impossible, and it turns out might kind of be, because other people are trying to do this and they're not making it work, this cinematic interlinked universe. What Avengers Endgame represents is collective storytelling across many different people over the course of a decade. And what does that give you? Well, it gives you that final battle scene, which is, again, in the same way that Star Wars Last Jedi gives me everything I want in a Star Wars movie, that last fight is everything I want in a superhero movie. And not because it's people hitting each other. Tons of movies, even good movies, like I love Wonder Woman, that last fight is terrible because there's nothing to it. There's no consequences, there's no emotion, there's no drama.
I'm Ares.
Exactly. Every bit of that last fight in Avengers Endgame is infused throughout with drama and consequences. Not just because they're good storytellers, but because of everything that's come before. You could watch that 10 times and be looking at things in the background. And there's just so much that's there. I saw it multiple times in theaters. I just love that they made it happen. And when, spoiler alert, when those portals start opening, I was just done, devastated. I mean, obviously I like genre movies. That's my list is full of that stuff, but it was so expertly well done. Oh, I'm gonna watch it again after doing this list. Okay, so Avengers Endgame, my number two.
My number one, you're gonna hate this.
What is it?
You're gonna hate it, but I will defend it. The Social Network. There it is, I got a Bart clap. All right, so here's why The Social Network is the number one movie. It says Brett is right as a lower third, God bless.
Who made that?
This is Sorkin and what's his name? The director. Anyways,
I don't know.
This is Sorkin and the director who, Fincher. I was gonna say Mamet, but that's because John hates when I say that. Mamet, Zosh. This is Fincher. Great director, great writer in certain circumstances, doing something that really defines the decade. And right now, as we go through and experience every testimony given by Mark Zuckerberg, what do we all draw on? We draw on what we learned from The Social Network.
That's true.
And we get that history of where it came from, the people behind it, what their thought processes were. Does it really match up? I don't know. But that's the thing, none of us know, but this is what really defined the decade, and I wanna watch it again, which is one of those tests. I wanna go back and see. It's super well acted, well done, and it really does define the last 10 years, what happened. And I'm so glad that a film was able to really capture something that huge for the entire planet in the way that The Social Network did.
And pretty early on too. Like I didn't even consider it for my list, but when I saw it back when it was in theaters, I really did like it. And when I think about what I thought when I thought of Facebook back then versus now, like we have come a long way. And I do think that even now, what I think about Facebook is still influenced by The Social Network.
Thank you, John.
So it wouldn't be on my list, but it's a good number one. My number one, I'm actually surprised, isn't on your list, but now I feel kind of weird. But I'm still gonna say it.
I can't wait for this.
Obviously there's a theme to my list, but my number one is, do you have a guess?
I don't
know. It's impossible.
Like Tomb Raider 2.
Okay, it hasn't come out yet, but I'm gonna love it. I like Tomb Raider, but it's not gonna be on the list. My number one is Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh my God, we saw this together twice, I think we did.
I saw it three times, I think. This is the only movie I've ever seen with Cenk and Ben, by the way.
I didn't know they were in it.
It's not that I necessarily think that this movie is cooler than some of the other ones on my list. But I like it for many of the same reasons. And the reason why it's number one is I know there are other Mad Max movies, but it didn't have a decade coming up to it. It didn't have other Star Wars movies right before. It had to, for many people, make this world and these characters right now. It does it instantly. Like as soon as you start this movie, you know what this world is. And every detail that's added onto it is just so fascinating and expertly crafted. This movie is just a chase scene. How could it be as good as it is? But it's great. Most of the movie doesn't even need dialogue. There's very little dialogue in this. It's visually more interesting than any special effects laden movie, even though most of this is practical effects. Mm-hmm. Watch the documentaries about it. It is amazing how they put this together. Watch documentaries about how they storyboarded this, how they sold this, how they tried to get this made for a couple of decades. It is exactly what they wanted it to be, mm-hmm. I think. Even more so than the other movies.
That's a very John answer. It's exactly what they wanted it to be.
And what they wanted it to be was good.
Yeah, but like they wanted it to be that. They put in the work. They could have taken shortcuts. They decided not to take shortcuts.
Or CGI.
Yeah, that's what I mean by shortcuts. Yeah. And it wouldn't have been what they wanted. And they did the work necessary to make it what they wanted. And they succeeded. And there's a lot of people who take shortcuts and do succeed, and that's frustrating.
Yeah.
This one didn't take the shortcuts, and it did succeed. So I like your list. I think to put it number one is insane,
You could flip around a few, but I really do think as an individual product, I think it's pretty much perfect. I don't see what you'd possibly change about it.
I just wish it was cinema.
Okay, so really fast, just any quick shout outs to honorable mentions that you consider? I mean, five is a very small amount of movies. We couldn't do 10 each.
Thinking about like Birdman.
Birdman's a very good movie.
Uncle Drew, I don't know if you saw that. Uncle Drew is Kyrie Irving. Mm-hmm. Boss Baby, like these kinds of ones. The Overboard remake, like the top heavy hitters.
Okay.
That was just like, one time we did a list of like the best, the hottest characters, and then my joke version was all gonna be Matt Damon characters. Yeah. And my joke version was Uncle Drew, Overboard, Boss Baby, and Bird Box.
And Bird Box is fine. So a couple that I was definitely considering. I mean, there are other movies in some of these. Like I really love Force Awakens. I thought that Deadpool was great. Guardians of the Galaxy was great. The first Iron Man. We might not have this entire thing if it wasn't for the first Iron Man. So very good. But also movies like Inside Out and Coco are both animated movies that I wish that I could have fit on the list because they're both amazing. There are probably some movies that are not about superheroes and wizards and stuff, but it's difficult for me to think of them when thinking of this list. But anyway, I mean, there have been a ton of good movies. These are just a few. I would love to know what you all think. So feel free to tweet at Brett and I, letting us know what belongs on your list, okay? And with that, we're gonna take a short break and come back with more for you. As we enter this new year, I thought it would be a good idea to look back on the last year and do a little roundup of the garbage people that were. So it's a segment we occasionally do on the show where we point out people that are not objectively the worst people in the country or anything like that, but they're petty and smug and annoying and overall damaging to the sort of country that we want to live in. So JR Jackson is joining me.
Yeah.
We've each got five, okay? There might be some overlap, we will see. But why don't you go with your number five? Feel free if you have any general commentary.
I feel like we will definitely have to have overlap because there's specific people in this country that are destroying it from within, and they just don't get enough credit.
Exactly.
For their destruction.
Yeah, one of them will appear on the Friday show. Brett Ehrlich, he'll be joining me. We'll give him credit then.
That's where the crossover in our list will be.
Okay, so what do you got?
So I will start with my number five, of course, going from top to bottom.
More garbagey as we go.
Yeah, a little bit more, a couple more banana peels and spaghetti sauce on each one as we go. A couple of diapers.
Just a couple of Chef Boyardee rings.
When you think of garbage, you think of like diapers and bananas.
Eventually. That's just that. That's yeah. That's disgusting.
Let's start with my number five. And by the way, my list goes to how the destruction of our country from within goes. And so the reason why Sean Hannity, may I show him first of all, is my number five garbage man of the year. Oh, and partially because he's one of the first, not the first, but the loudest voice when it comes to the state-run propaganda channel that he works for, and specifically his show. He works in coordination with the president. He advises him. I'm not sure what he advises him on. He gives him a lot of his ideas that he thinks are real and are based in reality. He pushes the propaganda. So whenever someone like Trump is trying to do the things he's trying to do to the country, he needs someone to back him up. He needs someone to push the lies that aren't just his. And so people can think, there's multiple people saying this.
Yeah.
Oh, the trusted Sean Hannity said so. From the Mueller investigation to Ukrainian lies and all these things that happens, Mr. Hannity is a constant. He's going in the garbage.
I could not agree more. So he, nice close up. Yeah, he's so smug and so, like of all of the people on Fox News, more than Fox and Friends, more than Tucker Carlson or Jeanine Pirro or any of them. If there was someone who you would predict would have no qualms with just blatantly lying to the audience, I think Sean Hannity on all the cable channels is by far the leader in that category.
He pushes those names, the constant, the theoretical memorable names. Like he did the Peter Strzok, Lisa Page thing a million times. The do nothing Dems, the this Dems, the that was the obstructions. He pushes these lines and make people think it's based in reality with absolutely no basis behind any of it.
Yeah, yeah. If you programmed an AI to be a blowhard Republican, that's what you would get. sort of similar, but working on the inside. My number five is a bit of a throwback. Some of them are Sarah Huckabee Sanders. She's been gone for a little while, but she did a lot of damage over the past few years, including in the beginning of this year. So she executed the White House press event and everything, giving us chopper talk. And look, is she the worst person ever? No. But she has done everything she can to destroy any respect for the truth, belief that you could expect something true to come from the White House. With her, that has not existed for some time, and thus into the can.
You know, and she kind of stands out because ever since she decided to step down, we haven't had
we've Stephanie Grisham technically.
She doesn't have them. She
exactly
doesn't conduct press conferences because who can follow up the degree to which she was able to lie for the president blatantly and openly? And after people found out, she said, "What am I supposed to do?"
Yeah,
that's the truth. Let's go to number four.
What's your four?
My number four, Mr. Lindsey Graham. Yes, that's the guy. I mean, I don't think it's that much of a surprise to put him on this list. Again, my theme of these is going to people that are assisting his president in doing what he has always wanted to do. Now, as it's gone down the line, of course, this guy was completely and vehemently against the president during the primary mm-hmm. run, which many Republicans were. The level of the way he's flipped mm-hmm. in such a 180 is larger than anyone else's. Yes, Chris Christie was on his side, then he wasn't, then he was again, then he wasn't. Lindsey Graham is the most vocal subversion of reality that's within the Senate. So, there was those times when he went on Fox and Friends, and he decided not only do you change your policies based off the president, but you also call him amazing.
Yeah.
From down to just something like golfing. It was, you're the best golfer ever, Mr. President.
Yep.
You're the best ever. I'm just saying you're the best. Why is golfing and praising him on his golf game, which we already know he cheats in, why does that have anything to do with your approach to being a good senator?
Because of and working Trump for the American is. People? That's why.
Because you've become one of his minions and there's no shame in showing everyone that's exactly what you are.
Yeah. Okay, that's a good number four.
Sorry. Yeah,
Feel free, there's time.
No,
my number four is gonna be a little bit outside of what we've talked about for some time, but I'm putting R. Kelly on here. Because that interview, I mean, it's one of the photos of the year. For a guy who has done, he's got some great songs, but for all of the terrible things that he has done, his insulation from accountability and defiance in the face of all that we know that was going on. And then that interview, I mean, that was crazy. There are other men like him, other celebrities like him, but he's one of the most like confident in what he has done. And so I'm gonna remember him for this year.
And you know what else he has done? It's been a problem because the whole situation with him sparked, which we've known since the 90s, mm-hmm. Sparked such a secondary discussion about what R. Kelly has done to girls. Not women.
Yep.
Throughout his career, it caused divisions among normal folks to start debating, and they went, "Oh, but R. Kelly's not that bad, man." So it actually highlighted other garbage people that, for some reason, because they like "I Believe I Can Fly," that suddenly it's okay for him to do these things.
I liked it, but not enough to look the other way.
Well, at least what he did do was identify more of those types of folks.
Yeah.
Moving on to number three for me. Again, we went straight down the line, Mr. Jim Jordan.
Oh, Jim Jordan.
Representative Jordan from Ohio. And the obvious parts, of course, is his propensity to be the attack dog against the impeachment hearings. That's the latest thing he's been known for. Literally, they put him out in front and they said, "Hey, Jim, you're the kind of guy who's going to yell and scream enough." And honestly, we talk about polls and how people are tired of hearing about impeachment. He's one of the primary reasons, because people get sick of hearing that same mm-hmm. mantra and the constant beatdown of this against reality. So people go, "Oh my God, these are just politicians that are talking to the air." He's the one who's allowed that to happen without being the name connected to it. And number two, let's not forget, he was one of the assistant coaches at Ohio State when all of these scandals went down with the sexual assault that was happening with that coach or trainer, whoever it was, that eventually killed himself.
The doctor,
I believe. Yeah, the doctor that killed himself over the rest of it. But he's just trying to come out squeaky clean from that.
Yep.
But instead, it proves the point, and I said this before. A lot of times, slimy politicians didn't become slimy politicians once they became politicians. Before, he was a slimy wrestling coach.
Yep. Look, I don't want to give any spoilers, but I didn't think of Jim Jordan, but that's a good one for the list. My next, I'm going to see your Sean Hannity and maybe one-up you, a Tucker Carlson. look, Hannity is more ridiculous, a bigger blowhard, all of that. In support of the president and the Republican Party. But Tucker Carlson in particular is way more committed to pushing white nationalism and white supremacy. And also, it's been mind-boggling to me the lengths at which people who I agree with on some things have tried to imply, Tucker's reasonable on this thing. No, he's not on anything. It's a con. It's a con. He's changing the wrapping paper. The president is white supremacy. That's all it is. And so he pretends to support populist policies every once in a while. He's going to support every Republican president from now until the day he dies. That's it. He's the same as all of his other hosts. Stop accepting the con. So that is, trash he goes.
That is Tucker Carlson's calling card, by the way. So remember he was on like Crossfire or something, CNN a long time ago, and he'd sometimes have these things to say that make 10% level of sense. He doesn't have that because it doesn't work out for him. That's why his book deals are several million dollars each. I read this. I told that to you before. I think it's tens of millions of dollars per book deal.
That's ridiculous.
And he's got two more left with that particular publisher.
Yeah, it makes tons of sense. He supports Donald Trump.
That's why he does what he does.
Yeah, that's true.
On to my number two.
What's that?
Again, my theme continues. I'm sure you could probably figure it out. It is your head of the Department of Justice, Mr. Barr. So
what problem could you possibly have with him?
He's been compared to a lot of fictional characters like the baby from Dinosaurs, like Fred Flintstone. And all are accurate.
Not the AG.
Except those two characters were lovable. And sometimes they told the truth. This guy's not one of those guys. Mm-hmm. So of course, he's the new attack dog and the new defense of the defenseless. If you want to subvert our rule of law, because he's the rule of law president, if you want to subvert the Constitution, if you need someone to back up and block your claims or anyone else's claims for the wrongdoing of our president, you need the top lawman of the country to stop the law from coming for him. This is the basis for what he does. From putting out a letter in front of the Mueller report to say it doesn't make any sense, and then trying to do it with the IG report as well. These are the type of things that regular Americans don't really know who's doing it, and he's the one who does it and makes sure it happens.
He's doing the job he was brought in to do, and we told people before he got sworn
Jeff
in
that Sessions
that's what
was
he's here
run
for.
Out.
Yeah.
And then Barr said, I know how to be the right guy.
He's such garbage. He makes Jeff Sessions look like a serious attorney general by comparison. Isn't that crazy? My number two, this might be a bit of a surprise, but Donald Trump. Because you know what? Donald Trump doesn't deserve to be number one in literally anything. He is a garbage person because he's not just awful, he makes everyone else awful. His allies, he's made Republicans awful. He's made the rest of us worse too. I'm worse because of Donald Trump. Every year, I'm a worse person because of this garbage. Like, almost everyone can only acknowledge one of the two things that he has done. They either say he has revealed how bad X was, or he's made X bad. No, he's done both. He has revealed the corruption and he's more corrupt. He has revealed the racism and he's made people more racist. All of this stuff, that is why he is so terrible. And the thing with Greta Thunberg, that was the straw that broke the camel's back. So, where he belongs, not in the White House, but in the trash house.
I mean, I can't disagree with it because he is the basis for my entire list.
There you go. But that's actually true.
So for my number one, and so far we've had no crossovers.
No crossovers.
This is amazing. This is great. I like that we get 10 full counts because—
Well, we'll see.
We'll see. You're right. We'll see. So far, I've had 8 full counts because it works out that there's that many people in this country that have looked to destroy it. My number one is the one who helps the president the most with his last level. The reason why William Barr was number two and helping with the law part is because this guy, Mr. Mitch McConnell.
Mitch McConnell.
Is working as, of course, he's the leader of the Senate. Of course, the Republicans have the majority there. Yeah. He's the one who's blatant, most recent of his garbage moments is he admitted his hypocrisy on not appointing, by the way, the third time he's done that. Yeah. Well, he's not appointed judicial nominees from Obama and has done so much for President Trump and will continue to do so and says so. Now with the impeachment trial coming to the Senate, he's also said, I don't have a mindset on this. I'll go right forward and do it. Just today, he said, I'm not going to be impartial about anything with impeachment. Are you kidding me? Days after they complained and said the Democrats were not being fair in their House inquiry. So where's the standards? Where's the principle? Yeah. We already knew he didn't have any, Mr. Mitch McConnell.
There you go.
Done.
You've got like a perfect list of the defenders of the president. Like Bill Barr is his shield and he's his shell.
He couldn't do it. He couldn't. I love that. He couldn't do the things he does without those people.
Exactly. Well, look, that is a good choice. But I will add this. My number one, Mitch McConnell. You nailed it. Because look, in terms of substance, Trump obviously horrendous. But Mitch McConnell, like if it wasn't for Mitch, then Trump would not be nearly as bad. Nothing has been done this year effectively, nothing positive anyway. Lots of bad stuff has been done. Almost nothing positive has been done because of Mitch McConnell. He is standing between the American people and the solutions to the problems that they face. And he is just gleeful about the entire thing. He is as smug as Sean Hannity, but has actual political power. He's a horrible guy. He's helping to protect this proto-fascist president that we have. He should be remembered through the rest of American history as exactly the sort of people that we should keep out of the highest levels of government power. And so I will join your picture in the trash with mine.
And I mean, so again, you brought up the part about legislative blocking. he's the one who's gonna allow things to come to the Senate, and then they will claim that Democrats, the do-nothing Democrats, as go back to my number five, Sean Hannity likes to say,
yeah,
the nothing has happened because of the blockade that has been created by this guy, who then they complain that the Democrats, when they're in office, do that.
Yeah.
When is the accountability gonna come? But for some reason, he slides right under.
Yeah, he declared himself the Grim Reaper and then gets to call them do-nothing. Very frustrating. Anyway, those are the top 10 garbage people of 2019. Ooh, who are we gonna get in 2020? Maybe there'll be some new names on the list. But JR, thank you so much, that was a lot of fun.
Awesome.
Stick around, we got more for you after this. So we're entering into 2020, and I think it's gonna be a pretty big year. I'm the only person who thinks that, no one else has predicted it. Obviously, politically, it's an attempt, it's a chance to either replace Donald Trump or ensure four more years of Donald Trump. It's gonna be huge for politics, also hopefully huge for this show. And so as we enter into it, I posted on Twitter asking for any of your questions about the state of American politics, the state of the show, just so that we can sort of take stock of where we're at and where we're gonna be going. I wanna know what some of your concerns are. And so I got a lot of good tweets. I wish I could get to all of them, but there are a ton that I'm gonna try to fit in here. So with that, let's start off with the first sent in by @NajaLegionis, who said, if Biden wins the nomination, Cenk and other progressives lose their primaries, what should be the action plan for progressives post-election? Will sticking to the Democratic Party set up in that bleak scenario still viable in your opinion? Well, look, looking forward to the election, obviously I can only speak for myself. I don't know how everyone is going to act. But what I can say is that looking back at the evidence I have about the most recent election, I know how my progressive role models will act. If I look back to 2016, where I supported Bernie Sanders in the primary and then Hillary Clinton in the general election, all of the people I respect most in politics did that exact same thing. That was what Bernie Sanders did. That's what AOC did. That's what Elizabeth Warren did. That's what all of them did. I mean, look, if you're a big Tulsi Gabbard fan, that's who Tulsi Gabbard supported, Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. That's what progressives did. Now, there are others who didn't, and that's perfectly fine. We'll have that debate or whatever. But I am not going to support Donald Trump getting reelected. And I'm not gonna do it explicitly or sort of as a side effect of whatever I do. We can disagree on that. And you can make the case to me, to Bernie Sanders, to AOC, to all of the others. We have a year to debate that. But the last thing I wanna see happen is four more years of Donald Trump. And I'm sure Bernie Sanders would certainly agree with that. So it would be bleak. I agree with the person who sent in the question, but I'm trying to limit how bleak it might be. And also, I still don't think that Biden is gonna win the nomination. So I'm not too incredibly worried about that. Next question from @ShaneKilling says, will we ever get a game show that has spouses? That way we can meet the extended TYT family. What I would give to watch a newlyweds show where John, Anna, Brett go against JR, Cenk, Malcolm. TYT Family Feud, TYT Newlyweds. Shane, that is a very good idea, I think, actually. The issue is that it really depends on the spouses. And I like the idea of TYT Family Feud a lot more than the Newlywed Game, because you're really setting yourself up for a potentially disastrous outcome with the Newlywed Game. If you do really badly, then that's a defeat that lasts after the taping. So I don't want that. But Family Feud might be a lot of fun. It really depends on how eager some people spouses are to come on. Like, you know, could Anna convince Christian? Probably, he's a really charismatic social guy, but he doesn't do tons of video. My wife is actually an actress, but she doesn't do a ton of like politics stuff really, so I could try. But I know Brett's wife does not really like being on camera. So we could potentially set that up. Maybe that could be a mid-year version of Hostmates or something. Next one's from Uniquely Kieran, who says, my questions are, one, how were you able to transition to a career in journalism? I'm thinking about making a switch to journalism myself, but I'm trying to figure out the best way to do so. Go back to grad school or try volunteering someplace, both? So Kieran, my overall advice would be talk to literally anyone else in journalism rather than me, because I don't even explicitly consider myself to be a journalist. I write op-eds, I do political analysis and commentary, but I'm not a journalist. I'm not generally doing, you know, investigative reporting or anything like that. And I did not get into this in anything approaching the normal way. I was in grad school, but not for journalism. I was pursuing a political psychology degree, and I just happened to be a big fan of the show, and so I sent in videos and they eventually offered a job. That is not a reliable way to enter into the career field, though, I will say. I don't know a ton. I would say Anna has actually taught journalism, so she might be a better source to go to for that. But I would say
I think that we do need journalists who take it seriously, who have a strong sense of journalistic ethics. And so if you wanted to get a degree in journalism, that certainly seems like a good way to start. Where you go from that in terms of careers, I would turn to your journalism professors probably, people who know a bit more. But I would not pattern yourself after me, and it's not a reliable way to get into this thing. Jared Kiger says, how excited are you for Star Trek Picard? I am very excited. I haven't been thinking about it a ton because, you know, Star Wars and all that recently. But I love that they brought it back. I never would have predicted that they would. I love that they're packing it with cameos. And so very excited, especially that I believe they've already okayed it for a second season when the first season doesn't even come out for months. So that's something to look forward to. Diamond Dog says, does TYT have a contingency if Cenk wins his election? I can't imagine you doing both TDR and TYT every day. So the plan right now is as he's campaigning and everything, I'm filling in on TYT. Which I think is very reasonable because I've been doing that for literally years. That's always what it's been. I just assumed that if he wins his election, I would carry on doing that. But the reaction from so many people saying that that seems crazy makes me a little bit worried. I still plan on doing it. And I'm gonna do it. I just might have to start like taking naps in the middle of the day or something. But there are plenty of people in news who do multiple shows, right? Doesn't Wolf Blitzer's in that building all day long, I feel like. Chuck Todd doesn't have a home. He lives in a closet in the building. So if they can do it, I can do it too. I just might have to start eating healthy or sleeping or something. Let's see. Diamond Dog had another question, said, given what we know about both the mainstream media's treatment of progressives and the progressive side's habit of eating their own, will there be more of a concerted effort made by independent progressive outfits in 2020 to amplify each other's messages for a common cause? I mean, I guess there's a lot of media and I can't like actively follow all of it. I can't even peripherally follow all of it, but I actually feel like there's quite a bit of this now, actually. I think, you know, we have people on the Damage Report who do other shows, you know, both inside and outside of the TYT network. Like, you know, Michael Brooks is doing stuff on our show quite a bit. We have a good relationship with the Majority Report and all of that. I definitely think that people could try to find new ways to collaborate. I think that TYT, I mean, we've said for a long time that we consider ourselves home of progressives. We want to integrate as many progressive voices as possible and help to boost them. You know, historically, obviously, a lot of these voices are, knowingly or not, sort of patterning themselves on the TYT model. Like, the show that Cenk made influenced a ton of YouTube shows afterward. I think for some outlets, like the struggle just to stay afloat in terms of money, it's so difficult. And like the algorithm constantly changes, you're constantly worried that this thing could fall out from under you. So a lot of people are probably just worried about staying in this thing. Hopefully, if things become more solid for more outlets, then there can be more of that cross-pollination. I think that would be a great thing for the movement because you definitely see that on the right. Neil Moffat says, over here in Scotland, it is looking more and more likely we will leave the UK. Do you think that America will ever separate into smaller countries with how divided it is? I certainly hope not. There are always multiple efforts for different states to break off and stuff like that. There are cases to be made. I think that that's too much. I think that if we work hard, if we fight hard, if we persuade people of our values, then we can move the entire country in the right direction and we don't need to split, you know, California off to one thing and then the deep south to another or something like that. That seems pretty disastrous. Someone named Ivory said, do you think that the right wing will become more violent, you know, as they claim when progressives start winning? I hope not. I certainly am worried about that. I mean, we've seen a good amount of right-wing domestic terrorism over the past few years. There are a lot of, I mean, we've covered on the Damage Report, like people who are fans of Trump saying that if he gets impeached, that they're gonna whip out their Magnum or something like that. I hope that a lot of it is just talk, just bravado. There's always a ton of that on the right. But I am worried about extremist violence. I think that if Donald Trump loses in 2020, that is gonna be a very tense situation. The aftermath of it is gonna be very tense. I hate even putting that out there, but I've been given a lot of reason over the past few years to believe that. Maya says, what are your goals for the show in the next year and next decade? That's difficult, and that is definitely, that's something that I've been thinking a lot about. I plan on meeting with my awesome team because things have been going really well. Don't get me wrong, the past couple of months have been by far the best months ever at the Damage Report. I mean, things have been going really well. Not in the country, but in the show, and that's what's really important. In terms of what we wanna do, I mean, the goal was always, like, what if MSNBC actually wanted to have a real progressive show and they had the resources and the talent and the time and the attention and all of that?
And obviously we don't actually have those resources, but that's what I've been trying to accomplish. And it's a lot of work, obviously. I've been filling in a lot on the main show. There's not as much time to brainstorm as I'd like, but I do want feedback. If you have ideas of things that you think that either this show or all, you know, progressive independent media is missing, ways to, you know, reformulate as we move into this election season, I do want to hear it. And I do plan to come out with some new ideas in the near future. Ashley McKinstry says, would you or any of your wonderful weekly co-hosts consider running for office? I can't speak for my wonderful weekly co-hosts. I think that they would all be awesome if they pursued political office. I can say that I love the idea of having a voice like in the House or something like that. And I despise the idea of running for it. I think elections are horrible. I think that until we get money out of politics, it's just terrible. The amount that you have to do to just try to get money to come in. Like I feel like it should just be, you know, a contest of ideas. And unfortunately, a lot of it is not like that. Now, things are changing. There have been candidacies in the past few years that have shown a different path. But right now, it is just, it's dirty and I can't imagine it. But things could change. You never know. Maybe in a few years. Ray Samuelson had perhaps the most interesting question. Who will be the Republican nominee in 2024? I mean, that is really the question. I mean, we're like forgetting 2020. Trump wins, Trump doesn't win. Where does the Republican Party go after that? That is really the question. I mean, I hope the answer is not Donald Trump. I also hope it's not Donald Trump Jr. But you never know. I mean, maybe it will be a thing where after Trump is gone, that's all the Republican Party has is devotion to this family. That could be it. We've had dynasties before in this country. I don't know, maybe Ted Cruz is waiting in the wings. There's a lot of people who are just keeping their head down until Trump is gone. Then they think, you know what, this isn't the Republican Party that I wanted necessarily in some ways, but I'm gonna take control of it once the time is right. And I don't know. I don't know what's gonna be left once we finally get to that point. And a final question, the Stone Buddha says, what was the one moment or story that restored at least some of your faith in humanity? This one is actually kind of easy, and not because there weren't a lot. There were a number, but honestly, and I don't wanna be sappy or whatever, but it does play into the most important issue for me. The work of Greta has been like the story. Her speech in Europe, where she was like in tears, like assailing world leaders for their lack of action. Like that's not a happy story, but I am so happy to see people addressing that issue in that way. Like I try not to lie or deceive the audience in any way. I'm pretty pessimistic about this issue and about the willingness of America and world leaders in other countries to actually address it. But I am at least like I'm heartened or emboldened to know that we're not gonna go quietly into this disaster, that there will be an effort, there will be passion, there will be strike back against this apathy towards our own destruction. And so hopefully things progress a lot more in the next couple of years in the right direction. But at least for now, I mean, and look, there's a lot of other, the Sunrise Movement is awesome. There's a lot of other great activists in this area. I don't wanna solely focus on her, but seeing that thing rise this year in addition to like AOC and the Green New Deal, like that has been the thing that has given me the most hope so far this year. So anyway, that's the questions. Thank you so much to everybody who sent them in. I don't know about you, but I am excited for 2020. Obviously a bit nervous too. God only knows what will happen. But we do have big things planned. I hope that it'll be a good year for the show and more importantly for the country. And I wanna thank you for joining us on this episode. It is a new year and we're gonna be coming back tomorrow with more live content. Hopefully refreshed and ready to engage in this thing once again. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow morning.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.